Well, welcome to this edition of the General Manager Podcast. My name is Aaron Thomas, also known as Native Seahawk on Twitter. I don't know about you guys, but I'm done with the crying. I'm done with the tequila shots. I'm done with trying to figure out the world and life without Doug Baldwin and Cam Chancellor on the Seahawks team. And, you know, here it is Saturday morning, and I think the dust has somewhat settled in Renton, where Transaction John and Pete Carroll have completely revamped this team and has literally shifted most of their cap dollars to the offense, which is extremely different than I would say the last 6 or 7 years, where the defense, it skewed more heavily on the defense that was getting a lot of the money. But just because the money is going on the offense doesn't necessarily mean the defense is going to be bad. As we've been hearing in the last 24 hours, the Seahawks not only signed Ziggy Ansah, finally got him to sign on the dotted line, but they also got a three tech in Mr. Woods. Al Woods, who used to be with the Seahawks back in 2011, has signed on the dotted line. And it's interesting because, you know, a lot of us were hoping that they'd get a combination of Ziggy Ansah and Ndamukong Suh, or Ziggy Ansah and Nick Perry, or even Shane Ray, but they went with Al Woods, which, if you look at his 2018 numbers, according to Pro Football Focus, they just retweeted out late last night, that he was ranked about 109th overall in the interior line. But if you go back to 2017, he ranked in the top 10 in terms of overall run-stopping defense. And so he's coming in to, you know, get maybe start for the Seahawks. He could see Jaron Reed and also Woods in the middle of that line. You know, we all want Puna Ford and Quentin Jefferson to elevate their games so that they can, you know, start in the interior defensive line. But Al Woods has been there, done that. This is going to be, what, his eighth season in the NFL, and he's played for a few teams. And, you know, you want that run stuffer. You need that. Someone that is going to plug up the middle. And Jaron Reed has definitely been showing that he can stuff the run up the middle, but he's also becoming more of a quarterback pressure guy. And so if you can get a really good pressure from the right side where Frank Clark used to be, and Ziggy Ansah being there, and again, let's get back to Ziggy real quick. He is, again, according to John Clayton on ESPN, that he's not supposed to start or even be on the field till probably mid-August due to that shoulder. And the good news is this, according to Clayton, the shoulder structurally is good. It's just a matter of him trying to regain all the strength that he had. And, you know, hopefully in the next few months, he can continue to rehab. But if you got Ezekiel Ansah on the right side, you got, you know, Jaron Reed and Al Woods in the middle, and then it opens up the position on the left side of the defensive line. And so who do you think is probably going to flank there? You know, you've got a few choices now, and it could be Rasheem Green. It could be the rookie Tolliver. It could be Artolier. It could be a few other guys. And I don't think the Seahawks are done yet with, you know, kicking the tires on a Nick Perry and getting him for not really a league minimum, but probably somewhere around the $4 to $5 million for in total contract, not just base. I bet his base would be around $2.5-3 million with incentives. He can get another couple more million. And so we'll see. I think the Seahawks, they've got plenty of cap space now that Doug Baldwin and Cam Chancellor are no longer with the team. And I don't really want to belabor the whole Cam Chancellor, Doug Baldwin thing, just because I think a lot of us are, it's like watching the last game of the season. You just don't want to go there anymore. You want to be able to move on and be able to, you know, look forward to the next season. And, you know, you can't replace a Cam Chancellor. You can't replace a Doug Baldwin. All you can do is hope to try to, you know, take a series of guys that can possibly produce some of the numbers that they were producing over the last 3 or 4 years on average. And, you know, it does definitely make way for the number one receiver on this team, you know, totally. I mean, even though you could say that the number one wide receiver for the Seahawks, it's actually could be anybody. You know, I wanted to say that, you know, with Doug Baldwin, he has the opportunity, though, to be able to help mentor some of the young guys. And, you know, I'm hoping that's what he does. I tweeted that out the other day, that I hope that Doug Baldwin and Cam Chancellor both find a way to be able to, you know, do what they can to help the young guys out, you know, make that learning curve a lot shorter. You know, Tyler Lockett, of course, is considered to be the number one receiver. We know that. He's definitely the number one deep threat right now. And he has the ability to move inside if they need him to. If DK Metcalf or Jennings can, you know, take that role of being the deep guy, then I think Seattle's got something where they could definitely move Tyler Lockett on the inside and be able to be that go-to guy on third down, especially similar to what Doug Baldwin's been doing. But we'll see. You know, you take a look at some of the other sort of rumors that were out there in the last 24 hours. You know, Kyle Rudolph from the Minnesota Vikings is, you know, not happy in Minnesota. The Vikings went out and got themselves a new tight end in the draft. And so the rumors were flying around that it's possible that Rudolph comes to Seattle. And, you know, you look at the depth chart there. Since Jimmy Graham left, and, you know, you had Ed Dixon there, and of course, several other guys, Nick Vannette. So you really don't have that number one tight end. I mean, I like Ed Dixon. He provides a lot of physicality on the end, you know, in case they want to run to his side. He can actually do a really good job of run blocking. And he's, you know, still has really good hands and decent speed. And so, you know, I'm not going to hate on the fact if we go into the season with Ed Dixon as one of our tight ends. But Nick Vannette is a guy that I think everybody, including Nick himself, is just like waiting for him to explode and actually move it to the next level. You know, he was drafted pretty high in when he got, you know, into the league. And so, you know, we're waiting for that talent to come out. And we've seen some tight ends in his caliber that had lots of speed, but just couldn't either get open or couldn't shake the defense and enough for the quarterback to feel comfortable with throwing to him. And so, you know, I threw out there on Twitter, let's go ahead and have Seattle kick the tires on, you know, giving Minnesota a 2020 third round draft pick for Kyle Rudolph. I think that would be an interesting play. You know, but if you take, you know, Sports Track, I don't know if you guys look at Sports Track very often, but, you know, they've got a really good, you know, way of looking at all of the teams and what the guys are valued on each team. And so, you know, our number one guy in Seattle, of course, is Russell Wilson at $28 million cap hit. This year, Bobby Wagner is number two at $14 million. And Dwayne Brown at $10 million. So somebody tweeted the other day that there was only six guys that was making $6 million or more. And that's Russell Wilson, Bobby Wagner, Dwayne Brown, Justin Britt, the center, and Tyler Lockett are all $6 million and above. Barkevious Mingo, wow. Now, he was kind of like in the middle of the lineup in terms of how much money that the team gave him. This year, he's set to make about $5.3 million. And so he's been another guy that's kind of on the bubble in terms of, you know, can he make this team this year with the fact that the Seahawks drafted a few tight ends. They got a few linebackers. They also got a few more linebackers in the undrafted free agency period. And so, you know, you take a look at that and say, gosh, do we really need $5.3 million on the books for Barkevious Mingo, who flashed. There was a few times last year that I was like, oh, good, he's there. He's able to at least make the running back go inside instead of on the outside. And, you know, he didn't really do too much on the passing game. I didn't see him too much, you know, in terms of, you know, running alongside a tight end or inside in a slot receiver area. And so you wondered, is Barkevious Mingo a guy that's probably going to be on the way out? I think so. I think that, you know, if we do release him or trade him, it's more or less going to be a release. It'll be a $1.1 million dead cap for next year, which, as we've stated on this podcast, the teams that have the least amount of dead money are the ones that have enough space on their cap to be able to go out and get those a bunch of those mid-level guys that sometimes can tip the team into playoff contention or more. And so you look at like Miami Dolphins and the Giants, who have tremendous debt dead money. You can call it debt money, I guess, but dead money this year. They really couldn't be players in the free agent market. They just didn't have enough to go around because they made poor decisions. They guaranteed a bunch of money to players that are no longer with the team. And so with Barkevious Mingo, he is going to count $1.1 million against the cap in 2020 if they release him. So that's not too big of a deal. They average about $6 million in dead money for most of this year. But now with Cam Chancellor is going to hit at $10 million this year, $6.2 million to Doug Baldwin. They're still paying Malik McDowell's bill at $1.5 million. So you're looking at about $19 million in dead cap this year, which isn't good. You don't want that much money. Like I said, there were about $6 million going into the draft and into free agency in dead cap space. But then with Cam Chancellor and Doug Baldwin both being released, they took a tremendous hit in the dead cap. So, but all of that, you know, as much as you don't want the dead money, you know, if you're going to take the dead money, you want that this year, and you want to do what you can to release it for next year. And Seattle next year and the year after are looking really pretty in terms of their overall cap space. And if you're John Schneider, you're trying to figure out, okay, I want to make sure that I have enough money for a Bobby Wagner extension and a Jaron Reed extension. And then you got guys in 2020 and 2021 that you're going to have to extend, including like Chris Carson, if he continues to play like he's been doing. You know, he's not going to command a $10+ million contract per year, but you still got to give him, you know, probably $6 or $7 million a year if he's going to continue to play the way they are. And furthermore, if they're going to continue to be the run first team that they've been the last, you know, 3 or 4 years and look to become this year, is that, you know, run first offense with the explosive plays downfield that Russell Wilson can actually do. And that's why you signed Russell Wilson. You need a guy that's going to be able to sell the run as much as he can and be able to throw the ball down the field to your big guys, DK Metcalf or Jennings, and be able to get it to Tyler Lockett and, you know, be able to have a very good level of confidence that that's going to happen. Instead of a 4-yard gain, you're going to get a 26, 28-yard gain down the field. And so that's the whole plan. That's exactly the process that John Schneider came with when he said, okay, I'm going to come in here. And, you know, when he interviewed for the position of general manager, he was like, I think we need to be a run first team. I think we need to build and have characteristics of our guys that brings a humongous physicality to the team. And for a few years there, I think in 2015, 2016, I would imagine that a lot of us would agree they kind of veered away from the physicality part. As much as they had some of the same nucleus guys on the team, they really weren't that you know, kick you in the teeth kind of players. And you know, call it ego, call it, you know, what you want, but it wasn't until, you know, they didn't make the playoffs in 2017 that everybody kind of went, okay, we went off the tracks here. And in 2018, they kind of got back to their roots. And in 2019, this year, they're really going back to their roots. And I'm really, really excited. I really do believe that they are building this team a lot like the 2013 team. And, you know, that team was stacked, and we didn't even know it. It's kind of like on, you know, you're so money, you didn't even know it. Swingers, the movie Swingers. And, you know, the Seahawks were so stacked, and we didn't even know it. And, you know, we were so happy that they made it to the second round in 2012 and barely lost to Atlanta. And Atlanta, you know, took their last drive and were able to kick a long field goal to win it and advance into the playoffs. And we were like, oh, man, this was, you know, Russell Wilson's rookie year. And, you know, even Russell himself was like, I'm so excited about 2013. And then they went out and got, you know, Cliff Avril and Michael Bennett. And, you know, these are two guys that a lot of people said, oh, they're too injured or they're too old or they don't have it anymore. And they dropped into the second and third wave of free agency that year. And, you know, then he got the draft in 2013, which wasn't a great draft for Seattle. Tremendously excellent. It wasn't a really great draft for a lot of teams that year. In fact, Seattle currently has six of the top, the first two rounds, six of the guys that were taken in the first two rounds of 2013 draft are now on the Seahawks team. So that tells you right there that in, you know, six short years, a lot of those guys are not playing with the original team that drafted him. And so it's pretty interesting. I think if Seattle continues to you know, paddle in the direction that they're in, and you know, they still have a tremendous amount of cap space for this year. You know, people are kind of wondering about the wide receiver room now that Doug Baldwin's not going to be suiting up. You know, can we really rely on you know, DK Metcalf or Jennings or the other guys that we got? I still think we can. I still think we're forgetting about Keenan Reynolds. I'm going to keep pounding my drum on him just because he looks just like Doug Baldwin. He's quicker than Doug Baldwin. And even Doug himself said, you know, watch out for this guy because in the year or two, he's going to be great. And I think we can't sleep on Keenan Reynolds. He's going to be my dark horse favorite going into the training camp this year. Speaking of training camp, I was a guy that I was really interested in seeing flourish here, but they just released was Nate Orchard. Nate is no longer with the team. He was, you know, of course, with Cleveland Browns, and that's where I really got to see a lot of his motor and watching Hard Knocks on the HBO special that they have, and I'm not too sure who's going to be in it this year. I think they're talking about the Raiders possibly being the featured team, but a few years ago, it was the Cleveland Browns, and Nate Orchard, you know, you could see that they did this really cool, like, montage of him, you know, pressuring the quarterback, and got to the quarterback a few times, but just couldn't finish. And it's kind of like what happened here in Seattle. He got onto the team, and you know, he signed on the dotted line. They didn't give him any guaranteed money, which kind of signaled that he was already on the bubble just for not getting that guaranteed money. But when Ziggy Ansah signed up to play for Seattle, they had to release somebody. Now, I tweeted that out. I was like, that is interesting that out of all the positions that they could have released from, you know, you've got several other sort of lower priority positions. And to make room for Ziggy Ansah, you don't want to take from your top priority position of need, which is the defensive line. And Nate Orchard plays defensive end. He also plays linebacker. And so I was really, really, and they could bring him back. I mean, that's not going to be just because he's on the streets now. It doesn't mean that in a few weeks or down the road, if he's still sitting at home, that Seattle calls him back up. And that's happened a few times in Seattle. So I'm not going to give up on Nate Orchard until he's on another team. But I just thought that was kind of interesting that they chose to release a player from the position of need. And, you know, Nate Orchard isn't a slouch. I think he's going to be playing in this league somewhere, whether if it's in Seattle or Atlanta or somewhere where the Seahawks defense, and maybe he knows a little bit more of the schemes now that he was in Seattle for just a short amount of time. So we'll see. I think, you know, going forward, Seattle's got a lot of things to be thankful for, even though, again, we say goodbye to Cam Chancellor and Doug Baldwin. I posted on my Facebook account that I got to meet Doug Baldwin a few times, and the first time I got met him, I didn't like him. I was at a Richard Sherman fundraising dinner downtown Seattle, and me and my friend, she was like, hey, let's go grab a drink. You know, everybody's in this part of the fundraiser, and they're going to be coming down into that bar area after dinner. Why don't we just, you know, kind of beat the rush and get down there and grab a drink? And so we get to the area where the bar is, and there's Doug Baldwin. Him and his agent were there with the maybe one or two other people that were just kind of standing at the bar. And they told us as we were walking into the fundraiser, don't ask any of the players for autographs. And so, you know, there I am, kind of a few drinks in and, you know, a little bit of liquid courage. And I walk up to Doug and I ask him, I shook his hand. And this was back in, I want to say 2012 or 2013. It might have been right before the 2013 season. And, you know, I was like, hey, do you mind if you sign? And I had this really nice paddle vest, and, you know, I'm Native American. And, you know, one of my aunties made this paddle vest where they're hand-carved paddles on this vest. They're sewn onto this vest. And he looked at me, and he was looking at me like, dude, don't even ask me. And his agent goes, hey, you were told when you walked in not to ask any of the players, and Doug isn't going to sign for you. And I was like, and Doug just kind of like rolled his eyes and went off to the other end of the bar. And I was mad. I was like, dude, I'm not, you know, there's nobody around. I don't get this. Why can't he just quickly sign this for me? And he wouldn't. And a little bit later on in the evening, we run into Larry Fitzgerald, who was there. And right away, I just walked up to him, and now I'm like five or six drinks in, so I've got lots of liquid courage. And I'm like, hey, Larry, will you sign this? And he looked at me, and he's from Arizona, where he lives. And, you know, of course, there's Navajo and Diné and all the kinds of different Pueblo tribes down there. And the first thing he said to me, is it okay for me to sign this? Like, you know, I'm like, you're not going to get me in trouble, are you? Oh, that was pretty cool. And so I said, yeah, go ahead, sign it. So he did. And I was mad. I'm like, man, I had to take an Arizona Cardinal, you know, a guy that's in our division that we just do not like, that team. And he went off and signed my autograph. But later on that season, of course, we won the Super Bowl, and, you know, Doug Baldwin did a really good job in that game. And then he started doing all this work with outside the football area with the civil rights and equality. And so, you know, he really re-earned my respect, and I kind of let go of that little hex that I put on Doug Baldwin, just because he's just a likable guy. He's very authentic, and I really do see him going very far in life. I don't know what it's going to be. I still hope that it's on, you know, the sidelines. I really hope that he becomes a head coach one day. I think he's got that passion and that fire to lead people, whether it's on the field or whether it's, in politics or whatever ways he can use that passion to fuel a better world. I really am looking forward to him. And Cam Chancellor, you know, I don't have any stories about him. I didn't meet him at any time. But, you know, talk about a mammoth dude and, you know, kind of a once in a generation kind of player, you know, to have that kind of stature and size. Kind of like what we're talking about with DK Metcalf. It's like the fourth time I've said that in this podcast. So you can tell I'm really, really excited about him. But, you know, you don't see many, you know, 6'3", 260-pound, you know, safeties. You know, usually, you know, they're a lot smaller. And even like, Blair, one of the guys that we drafted this year, who's a safety and hits really hard. You just don't, you have to really appreciate what Cam Chancellor did for Seattle and, you know, putting his whole body into the game, just like Doug Baldwin did and Cliff Averill. I mean, these are three guys that, and I tweeted this out the other day, like any other team in losing these three guys due to health, and it wasn't because there was contract disputes or, you know, it wasn't like OBJ or Antonio Brown, where they just didn't want to be there anymore. They wanted to play for Seattle. They wanted to continue to play. And for these guys to no longer be on the team, any other team would have folded to have these kind of pillars go down. And, you know, that's, again, kudos to Transaction John and his scouts and all the other parts of the general manager's office being able to replenish and retool and stack the cupboards once again with guys that are just as hungry as those three guys were, and to be able to move this team forward. I'm just really, really, as a fan, as a season ticket holder, as, you know, a person that's been watching the Seahawks since I was 8 years old, I am just really, really pleased with the work that John Schneider has done. And I really hope that one day he becomes executive of the year. I don't think he's ever going to get that. I don't know how or why not. I mean, you know, who drafts a, you know, under 6 foot quarterback in the third round, you know, who becomes the highest paid quarterback in the league at one point? You know, who does that? It's so rare. I mean, the guy just continues to find gems and try, you know, is able to negotiate contracts and to get, you know, top tier free agents to come to Seattle, even if it's just for 1 year. That takes a lot of know-how and smarts and, you know, persistence and a little bit of, you know, swag on his part to encourage to be able to say, I want that guy, you know, or the courage to let go of a guy like Frank Clark and know when to say, you know, we can turn that one player that we helped develop into 6 draft picks and more cap space so we can sign, you know, 2 or 3 of the third wave free agents that are going to help us, you know, provide depth on this team. You know, he's just done so much. I'm really, really you know, proud of him and thankful for John Schneider. And, you know, this podcast is called the General Manager Podcast. And so you can see why, what it takes to be a general manager. You know, you have to have that vision. You have to have the wherewithal to be able to say, I want that guy, I need that guy. And not just that guy, not just because of his arm length or because of his height or because of the way he hits or the way he catches, but because of the way he thinks and the way that he always is a part of football. Like, everything's about football with that guy. When you sit and talk with him, you know, this is exactly what John Schneider does. You know, he looks below the surface and says, you know, will this guy be a better fit for us? And, you know, and probably has, I would love to just be a fly on the wall in John Schneider's office for like a week, you know, during, like right before the draft or right after the draft when he's talking about with free agents. I'd love to just sit and just learn from this guy and be, you know, an apprentice to John Schneider and just, you know, I'm not trying to like raise the guy up too much, but I mean, he deserves it. He deserves a lot of respect and he never asked for it. You never see him, you know, go off like the Bills GM did when, you know, there was talk about the Seahawks being the front runner for Ezekiel or for Ziggy Ansah. You know, you never see John Schneider like putting something out of like, going on the offense and, you know, letting ego drive him. You just never see that. He could. He could totally just get on 710 and be like, hey, this is wrong. You know, this, you know, we're this, we're that, we're better. He doesn't. He just goes about his business. Him and Pete Carroll, they snicker on the sidelines because it's like they have a secret, like they know the future and nobody else does. And I remember talking about this before the draft. It was, I think it was sometime in February or March, where other teams have been literally taking the Seahawks secret sauce and have been applying it to their teams. And I remember tweeting out, you know, John better do something different, because what he was doing in 2011 and 12 and 13, 14, 15 is starting to catch on with the other teams. So what's he going to do? And I don't think he's done too much anything differently. I think he's just stayed the course, where other teams are like, well, we drafted big in that position, and we got guys that have long arms in that position, and guys that have a big chips on their shoulders in that position, you know, and you know, maybe we can be a run first offense. But I think they start to kind of like not see the results right away, and they give up. They throw their hands up in the air and say, well, I'll go back to getting that 5'11" cornerback, or that 6'4" quarterback, you know. It's just interesting. I think, you know, Seattle, you know, John Schneider just said, I'm going to stick with the process. I'm going to dance with the person that got me there. And that's physical, hard-nosed, kick you in your teeth football in every position, from the punter all the way down, all the way up to the quarterback. And that's what's made Seattle so damn successful. And I'm, again, really proud of this team. All right, that's it for me here on the General Manager Podcast. I'll be back next Saturday, and we'll talk about what other great signings transaction John's going to do to continue to bolster this team as we, I think I'm going to say it, we're going to make a run to the Super Bowl in 2019 and beyond. My name is Aaron Thomas, native Seahawk. Take care wherever you're at, and go Hawks.